I'm Jake Lawrence on K103.7 FM. And on the line with me is Steve Earle, who's playing at the Corona Theater Saturday night here in Montreal. Welcome and thank you for taking the time to talk to us, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Back in 1990, you came here for the Yoka crisis here in Ganawagan, Montreal. And the funny thing is, I doing my research this morning, it ended on September 26, 25 years ago to the day, which coincides with your show here tomorrow night in Montreal.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah,
that was a little different. I came, you know, up through Vermont, through the border. That time I came on a cigarette boat, you know, from downtown Montreal out to the, I flew into Montreal and then I went out to the reservation on a boat, kind of in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I think I was behind you because I was at the press conference you did.
Yeah.
What sparked your interest in coming up here for that crisis?
It was, you know, we spent a lot of time in Canada and in those days, and they approached me originally. You know, it was in the news, and I said sure. It was kind of like the equivalent of a USO trip. I went out there to entertain the troops. They'd been out there for a while.
Yeah,
and. You know, and those guys were a pretty interesting lot. They stood their ground for a long time, and it was as much to do with, you know, the issue of them selling cigarettes on their reservation. Mm-hmm. Is one thing, but it was the way that it was handled when they decided to shut it down. They did go in to those little shops and throw women on the ground and stick guns to the back of their heads, and that's what sparked shutting down the freeway. Yeah. and the blockade. It was the way that they were treated, and it was those guys. Most of them are gone now. You know, they were pretty interesting. You know, Lasagna, all those guys, all those leaders of that Omega Man of that blockade, and it made an impression on me that carried around the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of people here from town are going to be at the show tomorrow night and still remember it and are very thankful that you did, you know, come up to the crisis and lend your support in that sense. Changing around things, doing my research again, I noticed you have a long list of acting credits, and some I've seen on TV. I've seen you on The Wire, True Detective. Last week I was watching Treme, and there you were. What brought you into acting? Was that something you wanted to do, or were you kind of asked to perform or be on these shows?
I actually avoided acting. I was offered acting roles back when I was a lot better looking, you know, and a lot younger, but I turned them down for years. It wasn't something I was interested in doing, really, or maybe I was afraid to do.
Yeah.
But I, kind of a recovery thing, you know, after I got sober, I started doing a lot of things that I hadn't done before, writing books and wrote a play. And that probably the play was the beginning of it, becoming interested in drama. But I did it finally because of David Simon, who created The Wire and Treme, asked me. He had this character that he thought I could play in The Wire. And it was a redneck recovering addict that required no acting. And so I just said yes. And it's created this other career for me. And I really enjoy doing it. I love doing it.
Oh, you do great on there. And I mean, you were, I think, very fortunate. I mean, The Wire, to me, is probably one of the best shows that ever hit television in its reality.
A lot of people believe that. And it's all over the world. I mean, I'm recognized more from having been on The Wire than I am for anything else worldwide. And some people ask if that bothers me, and no, it doesn't bother me. I'm very proud to have been part of it.
Oh yeah, it's a very nice credit to have. Now, I also found out this morning, which kind of threw me. You're working on a musical. Are you still doing that?
I am.
Based on the Washington Square Serenade.
Yeah, it's based on that record. I live in New York for the last 10 years, and Washington Square was the record that I wrote, you know, the song cycle I wrote as the year I moved to New York. So it seemed like a good place for me to start. I came up with a story that I think will work for that, for most of the songs of that record, and most of the songs of that record will be included. There'll be some new songs. It is just in the early stages of development now. I'm talking to a couple of different companies about it, and I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of where the money's going for songwriters. It's kind of come full circle.
Oh, cool.
You know, back to Broadway. And it's because the music business has changed and kind of shrunk quite a bit, the record business. And
yeah.
It's a musical theater. I've seen some musicals in the last few years because all I do in New York is I go for my own entertainment when I'm home. I do two things: live theater and Major League Baseball. Those are two of the reasons that I live there. So it's the two biggest improvements over my lifestyle in Tennessee for all those years.
You just made me think of a question concerning, you're talking about changing of the music business, which is a lot of topics, because I work in radio and stuff like that, and yourself in the music business, and my son and a bunch of his friends are all trying to start a band like any 20-year-old would. In this city here, it's very frustrating for them because there really is no place to play, and when they do, it's pay to play for 20 minutes. What advice would you give a young musician today?
It's tough. I mean, my own son Justin, you know, he's a little older than that. He's 32, but he's been doing this for a while. He's made four albums now, and he's or five, I guess. And he's just it's a different music business than the business that I came up in.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is anybody can make a record. The bad news is anybody can make a record. I used to say I wouldn't be involved in. And my music being used in ads, I've that's changed. The best way for a band to break now is to get a song into an ad. I allow my music to be used in ads. I have some rules about it. I don't let my music be used for obvious reasons to advertise alcohol, pharmaceutical companies, or the military. That's three things. But other than that, you know, I always entertain somebody that wants to use my music in an ad because that's the one way the business has changed. So one of the places that you can go now is, you know, get to know people that work for ad agencies, because there are young people who actually do, and there are agencies that do nothing but provide music to larger ad agencies. And it's simply a reality of the music business now.
Right. Let's touch on your new album. I've been giving a listen over the week here, Terra Plane. It's a blues album. It's gotten great reviews. I've been reading all over the internet about it. Some of the critics are going, they're happy. They love the album. They're going, they're kind of shocked that you did a blues album. I see it as a natural progression in your career.
It's just a matter of breaking down, you know, concentrating on one of the components of, you know, I've written blues songs before, but, I just wanted, so for the same reasons I made a bluegrass record when I did it in 1999. It's always been a part of what I do, and I wanted to concentrate. It's sort of like coloring. You know, my albums are usually all over the map, a lot of different things going on. But it's sort of like coloring with the 32 crayon box, and then you decide one day to limit yourself to six crayons, but you pick the crayons.
Yeah.
And it sometimes can be sort of, it can be creatively stimulating to sort of limit yourself to a certain format sometimes. And that's kind of what I was doing.
Oh, okay. Tell me about the Dukes. Do you still have Eleanor Whitmore in the band?
Oh, yeah. It's exactly the band that you have, that you hear on Terra Plane. It's Will Rigby, who's been around since 1999, since Transcendental Blues on drums, and Kelly Looney, who's been around since Copperhead Road on bass. And then Chris Masterson and Eleanor Whitmore, who are married and make records of their own as the Mastersons, and they're really, really good. And they'll open the show. And Eleanor, you know, she's the best musician in the band. There's not any doubt about it. And she sings her ass off. So the Mastersons have been, you know, this band took this sort of quantum leap when they came along.
Oh, okay. And finally, just to finish off here, what can the audience expect? I mean, you got a heck of a repertoire of songs going back to the early 80s. What can the audience expect? I mean, from your new album, you probably play four or five songs, but how far back? And are you going back to Guitar Town?
Oh, you'll hear pretty much the whole, you know, we play a while. You'll feel pretty much the whole new album, but you'll hear stuff all the way back to Guitar Town.
Oh, great.
And it's a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
So just come prepared to stay for a little while. The Masters will play for about a half an hour. We'll play for about two.
All right. Well, then, thank you very much, Steve, for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.